Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, our neighbor, Chapel Hill, in Chapel Hill, Denny Rosenbluth, was the hero, of course, of the 1957 championship victory, basketball victory over the University of Kansas, and Wilt Chamberlain, the 54-53 triple overtime victory, which changed history in North Carolina.
It did in a lot of ways. The story is not about us winning, maybe being undefeated, but what happened to the whole state of North Carolina. Everyone got interested in basketball, whether to see if we won the game or if they rooted against us if we lost the game. But they all got interested in Carolina basketball one way or another, and I think we made a lot of people basketball fans. Not moving away from football, but now more interested in basketball.
Were you aware how did you feel, or what did you know about the television coverage of the game? Because we weren't used to seeing it on television, but back then, by the time the finals came and it was on television all over North Carolina, we just stopped what we were doing and gathered around TV sets. It was like almost a religious experience.
Yeah, it was also late at night, so there wasn't much to do than watch it on a small screen. I think most people had a 12-inch screen,
right?
Maybe if you
that was a big
if
experience.
You were wealthy, you had a 19 or 25-inch screen. But we knew they were televising some of the games because I remember them cutting a hole in the wall in Willen Gym and putting in a camera there, but. That was the beginning of broad vision because they didn't want to compete
with
the radio station. So they didn't have sound, and they just had the radio announcer doing the game. But you can watch the game on one camera, which I guess was big then because nobody else had one camera.
So we were used to going out and being recognized. I mean, before the championship game, you'd have the little bit of television. And people were excited about basketball. So if you walked out, people
yes,
would.
But a lot of people don't realize, and for us it was important. We only played 8 home games that year. We played 24 games on the road and won. So we were used to going out of Woolen Gym and playing, and whether or not they had TV at the places that we played, we didn't make a difference to us. We were happy to be playing and winning, of course. So, it was a happy team. It was a very happy team that I was associated with, which I appreciate so much.
Well, a lot of people still wonder, Lenny Rosenbluth, how you happened. I mean, you grew up in New York. How did you get to the University of North Carolina, and how did you pick up the game of basketball?
Well, this is an interesting story. I don't know if you can call me an athlete or not, but the one thing, I was brought up during World War II, and my dad wasn't around, my uncles weren't around, no one, they were all gone. They were all fighting the war one way or the other, and I had no one to play catch with. And when I was growing up and elementary school before 1945, I basically couldn't catch a ball. And
talking about a baseball now.
Any ball. And I remember this. I was at a boys' club camp during the summer. It had to be during the war because we were out in Long Island, I believe, and they had the military still there, and they were taking target practice during the time I was at camp. And every cabin had a softball team. And I didn't want to play because I didn't know how to play. But they said, you have to play. And they had me pitching. And they hit a ball back to me that I couldn't catch. And it hit my glove and rolled the opposite way. And I think the bases were loaded. And the time I got the ball to throw it anywhere, it was a home run. And everyone was laughing at me, and I felt
bad. Is that true now?
This is true. It's a true story. And I had to be, 10 or 11 years old at that time. So when I got back to New York, I decided I got to learn how to catch a ball. So I got a ball. I think back then it was called a Spalding. It was just a red ball. and I would go against a brick wall and throw it and try to catch it and throw it and try to catch it, and at the same time moving my feet, which I didn't know about, but I was moving my feet to catch the ball too, and I was doing this every day. And just a wall on the side of a building, catching the ball and learning how to catch a ball. And eventually, the war was over. My dad came back, my uncles came back, and I had someone to play catch with. So it was, you know, a different story. But one of the big things that happened, it had to be the 1946-47 season. The war was over 1945. So it could have been the 45-46 season, but my dad got tickets to Madison Square Garden to a basketball game, and I didn't know anything about basketball. You know, with me, we played games around the street, stoop ball, hitting the ball off a stoop. Well, no one had a real football.
So what part of the city?
I was born in the Bronx.
It started
in Manhattan when my dad went away. And when he came back, we moved to the Bronx. It's the only borough with the Bronx. So, you know, it's a big deal, the Bronx. But he took me to this game, and it happened to be City College of New York versus NYU. And if you look at from that standpoint, it's Duke playing Carolina. I mean, it was a big rivalry. And, of course, we were the cheap seats all the way up. But the people are cheering, and I'm watching these graceful guys run up and down the court and playing basketball. And I said, that's an interesting game. I would like to take it up. And
you had never played basketball before?
Never touched a basketball, let alone play a ball. I guess maybe in gym I might have picked one up and threw it at a basket, but I didn't know what I was doing. So by that time, I was in junior high school in seventh grade. And in gym, I started taking up a basketball and trying to learn how to shoot. I didn't know how to dribble. I dribbled with two hands. I had no idea what the game was about. But I loved it. It was just, to me, right away, I thought it was a great game. And every day, and we lived near a park, Ratona Park in the Bronx. Today, I think it has a star next to it because it's a dangerous place to go at night, one of the more dangerous parks to go at night. They warn you. So, but I played every day after school at the park, trying to learn how to shoot a basketball. And I tried every which way, not having any idea. And
not coaching, throwing it up
there. No coaching. I was maybe 6'3 then in junior high.
How old were you at that point? This junior high school?
This is junior high school, 1946, I guess, 45, 46. And they asked me, would you like to go out to basketball? Sure. But I couldn't make the team. I don't know how to play. I had no idea.
You went out for the team and didn't make it?
No, I didn't. I didn't make it as a seventh grader. Now, I got better playing, but not very good, and I went out for the eighth grade team, and I didn't make it either. So my ninth grade, which is basically your last year in junior high school, I went out for the team, and I said, certainly I'll make it this year. I still didn't make it.
You didn't make it, and well, at some point didn't you think, well, this is not for me?
No. I enjoyed playing. I liked it. Not making the team didn't make a difference because I was playing outside with the guys from the neighborhood. We would make up a team and go to the Y and enter a tournament, get beat the first or second game. But it was fun. It was just fun. And I didn't score many points because I had no idea what I was doing, how to shoot with anything else. So starting 10th grade now, I'm at James Monroe High School in the Bronx, and I'm going out for the JV team. And I was probably at 6'4", 6'5", then, but my coordination wasn't there, and I still didn't know what I was doing, so I didn't make the team my 10th grade as a JV team. But I kept on playing.
So you're playing on the streets?
In the park, the streets, looking at people and trying to figure out how in the world do you shoot a basketball. And it would go in, and I tried shooting over my head, shooting from the side. If you have no idea what you're doing, you're not shooting the ball, you're throwing the ball. You know, I sang with someone that's not shooting, they're throwing the ball. So I had no idea. So the 11th grade, I went out for the team, and I was cut at the beginning of the season, the 11th grade. But I was playing for outside teams, and I was starting to develop both mentally how to play the game, and I guess my jumping ability came into the I was able to get off the floor, and I was playing real well. And the coach called me back the second semester of my junior year and said, "We'd like for you to try out again for the team." And this time, I not only tried out, I made the starting team in high school. And I guess I was fairly good. I wouldn't even say I was a good player. I was fairly good.
What were the strengths? Were you the great shooter?
I could jump. I can get off the floor.
But what about shooting?
Shooting still was not there yet because I didn't know how to shoot. But the coach.
I'm visiting with Lenny Rosenblum. We're talking about his development into a basketball player. Unfortunately, we have to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Sure.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Lenny Rosenblum. Almost everybody in Chapel Hill knows who he is and was, but if you didn't, he was the he wouldn't accept the idea that he was the key man on the 1957 championship team, but you'd certainly agree, wouldn't you, Lenny? You were a key man.
I was, yes.
But let's go back to where we were. You're in the 11th grade.
I'm in the 11th grade, and the coach calls me back, and this time I'm starting, and I guess I'm a forward, shooting a one-hand push shot and learning how to do that. But what the coach did, and it had a tremendous impression on me, one of the games, I think maybe I scored 2 points. I mean, everything I shot was in the basket and out the basket. And he said, "Do you know how big this basket is?" And I said, "No." And he took a rim out and he showed me. "Now, that darn thing is big. If you're looking at a rim, looking down at it, it holds 2 basketballs. And I said, "There's no reason why I can't put one ball in that big a ring." And that changed everything for me, having the idea of how big that rim was.
So you just said mentally.
Mentally.
Instead of thinking that rim is tiny.
When you look up there, it's like a small hole. It's not a very big hole. But when you get a rim and you look down in it and you get a basketball, you can put 2 basketballs in at once.
So
it
was so in your mind you're saying, there's no reason I can't, put the ball in the basket.
I can't put the ball in the basket. That is absolutely right. And after that game, I started scoring maybe 17, 18 points a game. And we went to Madison Square Garden. We were in the city championships. And we won the first game, and then we went into what you might call the Final Four. And we lost that game, and I had maybe 18 points. But I still don't know what I'm doing out there. You know, I get the ball, and I shoot, and that's about it. But we lost the game to Boys High, and got dressed, and I was leaving Madison Square Garden. And there are 2 ways to get out of the dressing room to get upstairs at the garden. You can go left, and there's an exit down that way, or you can go right, and there's an exit on the right going up. Why I turned right instead of left, I have no idea. But by turning right changed my life. Because as I turn right and I'm walking down a hall, a fella comes up to me and says, "Hi, my name is Harry Gotkin, and I'm a scout, and I like the way you play. You have a lot of potential, and I'm recruiting players, high school players and college players, to play up in the Catskill Mountains in New York during the summer. Would you like to play?" And I said, "Sure." You know, I had no idea who this man was, but I said, "Sure." So I gave him my telephone number and my address and didn't hear anything from it. And then he calls me right before the summer, and "We have a job for you at Lowell's Country Club up in the Catskill Mountains." Now, what the idea was, every hotel had a team. And the reason is for entertainment. You don't have to hire anyone for one night of entertainment. You play another hotel. and then you go to their hotel and play. And every hotel had a team. And who were on these teams? Mostly all college basketball players. I was like maybe one of the only high school kids that even was on the team, but I was 6'5".
Did you have to work during the day?
Yeah, we worked. I was on the athletic staff 1 year. I was a busboy another year. So you worked there. You didn't make much money, but it was a summer. You ate good, and you played basketball, which is great. But during that summer, I don't know what happened. In the beginning of the summer, I was not anywhere near the starting team. I was just a player on the team. But three players, I don't remember their names or what college they went to, but they were college players, went on a weekend before the basketball started even, and they got in a car accident and never came back to our team, the Lawrence Country Club. And now I had to start because it was just a number of players, and I was tall. What happened that summer, everything changed for me. I saw the court a whole lot better. I saw that you didn't have to rush your shot. The shot is there. You don't have to rush it. And I also, how it got to me, I think it was basically watching baseball players and how a pitcher threw a ball where his shoulders are square to the plate. Well, that's the way you shoot. You can't throw a ball.
So you're learning all this yourself?
I haven't had any coaching. The 6 or 7 games that I played in high school, the coach couldn't keep me up on stuff. So I figured out how to shoot a basketball that summer, and the court just opened up for me. So I don't know how I did it, but I always got free. It was simple for me to get free on the court. I developed a jump shot that summer, and I got to be a very good basketball player that summer. We played against Kutcher's Country Club.
Excuse me for interrupting you, but you got to be a basketball player on your own rather than the coach of that team, they had a coach.
Didn't have a coach.
What about the other college players? Were they helpful at all, or just
They were there. They were just saying, yeah. They didn't say what you do or anything else. I'm on my own. This is just the street basketball that I was playing. And I played against Kutcher's Country Club. Their coach was Red Auerbach of the Boston Celtics, and he had all his draft picks playing on the team up there. And I was dumb, didn't have any idea, but I played very well against him. I mean, extremely well against him. In fact, if I have to say it, I made all his draft picks look bad. And Red comes to me after the game.
Did you know who Red Auerbach
was? I had no idea who he was, but he came up to me after the game and I'd like to get your name and address and telephone number. I said, sure, coach, thank you. Played a great game, thank you. So I get back to New York. This is 1951, 1952.
So you're going back into high school.
Going back to high school, my senior year, 1951, 1952. I get a call and a telegram from the Boston Celtics that they would like for me to come up to Boston and work out with the Celtics.
Is the season started in high school yet?
Nope.
This is before
school
the season
hasn't
starts?
Even started yet. It was before Labor Day. School started Labor Day. So I asked my dad, do I go up there? And he said, sure, why not? So I packed my little bag and went up to the Boston, rode the train to Boston and went to the hotel, and I see Easy Ed McCauley from St. Louis Billiken was All-American. I see Bob Cousy there, and I'm seeing all these guys that...
Now, do you following basketball now, so you know who
I'm
these
following
people are?
The names, but back then we had a small TV, and they had games coming in from Madison Square Garden that I knew the names. I saw Easy Ed McCauley when they came to the Garden. And the only teams I knew about were teams that came to Madison Square Garden. Everything else, I had no idea if they were the other teams and other colleges other than the teams that came to Madison Square Garden. So I'm playing, and he gives me my roommate. My roommate was Bob Cousy. So he is from New York. He went to high school in New York, and we went to practice together, and he's talking to me and about the Celtics. And I said, well, I'm from James Monroe. He said, where's that college? I said, no, it's a high school. He went, well, it's a high school. So, and one of the players on the Celtics in 51 was a fella named Horace McKinney. We know him as Bones. Okay.
He was on.
On the team, and I'm guarding. Horace. Horace McKinney.
His
name was Horace.
Now, was he?
Well, he was lanky, 6'6", I guess. And
but he was a North Carolina.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know where he was.
I was guarding him, and a funny story with the Celtics. Today, every high school kid knows how to run a 3-man weave down the court. Now, you know that. 3-man weave. The Celtics are running it. I have no idea what they're doing. I'm looking at them, and I say, what in the world are they doing? And I kept on in front of the line. I ran to the back of the line. And in front of the line, they went to the back of the line. So one of the players, I think it was Cousy, says, why are you running in the back of the line? I said, I don't know what you're all doing. He says, it's simple. Pass the ball and run ahead of him, and then you'll get the ball and pass it again. Run behind. That's where I learned a 3-man weave with the Boston Celtics. Wow. That's sort of strange, isn't it? Anyhow, I played very well with them, and because I wasn't nervous, I wasn't afraid. It was just another practice game.
Well,
so I went back to New York, and
I tell you what, Lenny Rosenblum, we've got to take another break.
Okay.
We'll get you back to New York City. And basketball there after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. If you joined us late, I'm visiting with Lenny Rosenblum. We're talking about how he got into basketball. And before we took the break, Lenny, you had been playing with the Celtics.
I was working now with the Celtics, and I went back. Now it's high school time. Even now I'm a week late getting back to high school. I was up with the Celtics for a couple of weeks, so now it's time to go home. But before I left, Coach Red Auerbach asked me, do you go to Madison Square Garden a lot? I said, no, Coach, it's expensive. I don't go there. So I tell you what I'll do. I'll put your name on the Boston Celtics players list. So all you have to do is go to the garden, go to the players' entrance, have some ID, tell them you're on the Boston players list, and you can get into Madison Square Garden. Great. You know, that is great. Okay. The start of basketball, my senior year, the coaches are on strike in New York.
The coaches are
on strike. They want more money. Okay, so here I'm starting my senior year, which I would have started for my high school team. Now there's no high school basketball. So I'm playing for different teams in New York. And Harry Gotkin is still the one that
he was the scout.
He was the scout. So I used to go to Madison Square Garden. Now, I can get into the game, but I didn't have a seat. So I would go into a game at the Garden. They had doubleheaders. They had great, great teams coming to the Garden. And I would be standing room only, and then I would take the subway and go back home, go to another game. This time Harry saw me and said, what are you doing? I said, well, I get into the Garden, but I don't have a seat. He said, come sit with us. And who am I sitting with? I'm sitting with Frank McGuire and Buck Freeman and Harry Gotkin.
So this is the first time you
met? This is the first time I met Frank McGuire. He says, hi, how you doing? I watch him play. And one of the players that we played against in high school, the team that beat us, Boys High, had a black player named Solly Walker. And Frank McGuire, in 1951, it's the 51-52 season, he was the first African-American to be integrated at St. John's University. So he was playing Frank McGuire. Frank McGuire was coaching at St. John's.
And he had recruited a black player.
Yes, Solly Walker, his name was. And I watched the way he coached, and I liked it. One of the things that I saw that I really liked And I don't know if it's the way it was done then or not, because I didn't see enough games, you know, during my life then to know how coaches coach. But he sat on the bench, and when Solly Walker made a mistake, the crowd at the Garden, they only cared about winning because they were betting on games, I would imagine. So they were booing Solly Walker. But the coach didn't take him out. He took him out a minute later when everybody forgot about the mistake of throwing the ball out of bounds. And I like that. And I never saw him yell at a player. They always sat at the end of the bench, and I'll tell you about that too, how I found out how this worked. And I said, you know, I like this guy. And meanwhile, I'm playing for the Carlton YMCA in New York. It is an African-American Y. I am the token white kid, I guess, playing for them. And we had a great team. And I was playing very well. And Harry's nephew was Davy Gotkin, that I got to know. And Davy Gotkin was a year ahead of me. He was one of the better guards in New York City, and he got a scholarship to NC State, and he was playing as a freshman at NC State. So Everett Case, Harry got Everett Case to come down and scout me while I was playing at Carlton YMCA, and Everett Case liked what he saw, and he talked to me after the game and said, we're coming to New York in a few weeks, and we'd like for you to work out against our team for a couple of days. We'll be playing at the Garden. So I did. I worked out against the NC State team, and I had no trouble scoring against them. I mean, no trouble at all. And he liked what he saw, and he said, how would you like to come to NC State? And I said, Coach, that's great. Because at that time, NC State was one of the powerhouses. They were in the top 10 in the nation. And playing at the Garden, you know, yeah, great. So I said, sure. You know, Frank McGuire asked me, where would you like to go to school? And I said, Coach, I don't want to go to school in New York. I don't want to get on the subway and go to college.
So let me get this straight. You liked Frank McGuire.
Yes.
Liked the way he coached.
Yes.
But you said, I'm not coming to St. John's because that's a subway ride away.
That's a subway ride.
I want to get out of town.
I want to have the college experience. You watch TV shows then, and young people in college, it's a college town, and there's the college, and it's different. It's just different. So he knew I didn't want to go to school in New York. So it was just that. And I'm watching all the games, and Everett Case invited my dad down to come to look at the school, and then they were playing in the NCAA tournament in Raleigh. In 1952, the first round, the NCAA, Kansas was there, not Kansas, Navy was there, Kentucky was there, St. John's was there, and North Carolina State was there, okay? First game, McGuire beats Case. The second game, McGuire's team beats Kentucky, who beat him by 40 points like 2 weeks before. And now he's going to the Final Four in Kansas City. Well, they lose to Kansas. Kansas had a big kid named Clyde Lovellette, and they beat Frank McGuire's team. So now it's spring break, and Everett Case invites me to come down to the school to see the school. My roommate will be Davy Gotkin, Harry's nephew. And my dad and I drive down to Raleigh, and Everett Case meets us the next morning. I think we stayed at the Walter Raleigh Hotel.
Sir
Walter Raleigh Hotel. I remember the name there, in Raleigh. And the next day, he drives me through the campus and shows me around. And you'll be rooming with Davy Gotkin, which is great because I knew Davy, and that'd be fine. And they having a big... after the season banquet that weekend when I was there, and they were all whooping it up, you know, NC State, they played in the NIT, they played in the NCAA, all at the Garden, you know, a good team. So they talked about a team that they've beaten again twice, and everybody's laughing. Who is this team that they're all laughing at? I have no idea. It's a team down the road. They didn't mention the name of the team. A team down the road, which I found out later who they're talking about. So
they weren't talking about Duke. They were talking about.
They weren't about Duke. They were talking about North Carolina. So he tells me, we're working out in the gym, and I'd like for you to work out. And I said, Coach, I'm not in shape. I don't have sneakers. I mean, I didn't come here to practice. I just haven't played in months. Don't worry about it, Lenny. You have a scholarship. Don't worry. Just you want to see. Okay. So he gives me sneakers, and I'm working out with a whole bunch of high school kids who are also working out, and they're throwing the ball at my ankles and this. I mean, I can't. Before I know it, I got blisters on my feet. Every muscle in my body hurts me, and I'm playing terrible. I mean, I'm playing as bad as you can play. And I admit it. I played bad. The second day of practice, I couldn't even hardly get out of bed. I hurt so much. And I really played bad. And we're going back to New York. He calls my dad, myself, and Harry Gotkin. He came down with us. And he says, Lenny, and he says, I hate to do this, but I only have one scholarship left, and I can't afford to waste it. So I cannot give you a scholarship to come to NC State.
Well, that's terrible.
That is terrible.
I mean, not just because it was...
Right, because
you were beginning to feel pretty good about yourself.
I was feeling pretty good because I was going to a college. I knew some of the players, and you know, I was going to be happy. So he said, no, I can't use you. So what am I going to say? Coach, please take me. But looking back, if he would have said, I'll still give you the scholarship, I would have sat at the end of the bench. I never would have played. Because for some reason, he didn't like the way I played. So I said, okay.
And when do you need to take a break?
Yep.
And so we're going to leave it?
Sure, we can leave it now.
That you've left NC State without a scholarship,
sure.
And we'll find out what happened next.
Sure.
After the short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. If you join us late, I'm visiting with Lenny Rosenbluth. We're talking about how he happened to get to North Carolina and the University of North Carolina. And we got you to North Carolina, but not to the University of North Carolina.
No, you got me to Raleigh.
And you got Everett Case turned you down.
Everett Case turned me down. He didn't want to waste the scholarship. I understand years later that someone said Vic Bubas told him, it's a big mistake, Coach, you're making. He was assistant coach at State. So I don't know if that's true or not. But
you ran into the coach from time to time once you got down here. Did you all ever talk about that again?
No. I never blamed him for not taking me. I played very badly. I mean, but he should have known because he saw me work out against his players. So he should have known.
He should have remembered.
He should have remembered. But he didn't, which is okay because it changed my life, of course, the way things happen.
Well, what did you do when you got back home?
I got back to New York, and I was down a little bit. But again, I've been cut so many times, it really didn't bother me. This time, I said, he's making the mistake.
Yeah, but for folks who join us late, you're in high school.
I am in high school.
But there's no basketball.
There's no basketball. When basketball did come back, I was then too old. My birthday is in January. And in September, when you're working out in basketball, I was 18. I can play the whole year. But since I missed the first half of the season, I then turned 19 in January, so I wasn't eligible.
Okay, so what did you do?
I was playing for the Carlton YMCA, which was undefeated, and we won everything in New York as a Y team. And I enjoyed it. And, when you're playing with a good team and a good bunch of guys, I mean, I really enjoyed it playing with them. But now I get back to New York, and Coach McGuire calls me and says, I heard what happened in Raleigh. Harry Gotkin told him.
Uh-huh.
Because Harry was fed up. Davey wasn't getting the minutes that Everett Case promised him. And then when he turned me down, He said, "That's it. I'm through.
I'm off for NC State.
I'm through. I'm through recruiting for NC State." So Coach McGuire calls me up and says, "I heard what happened, Lenny, and I need to talk to you." And I said, "Coach, you know, I would love to play for you. You know that. But I don't want to go to St. John's. I don't want to go in a subway to school." He says, "Let me talk to you." And I said, "Okay." So I met him for lunch in an Italian restaurant in New York. And he tells me, "Lenny, no one knows this, but I'm leaving St. John's." "Where are you going, Coach?" He said, "I don't know yet, but I will be leaving St. John's. And I want you to come with me. I need you to help me build a program." He said, "I really need you." And I said, "Coach, wherever you go, I'll go." And that's how I got to Carolina, because I didn't know where he was going, and I don't know if he knew exactly where he was going, but he was leaving. I think University of Alabama and University of North Carolina both wanted him.
Why did he come to – what did you learn about why he came to Carolina?
His son, Frankie Jr., had cerebral palsy. And in New York, they were living in an apartment. In New York, it's hard. In a college town, the college hospital, you have a house and you take your son to a good hospital.
And you think that's what North Carolina had –
Yes.
That drew Frank McGuire rather than the basketball program.
There was no basketball program when I got here. There wasn't any. And I'll tell you that. The first time I saw Chapel Hill, the town of Chapel Hill, and the university, this was like a dream. There's your college town, and there's your university. I mean, it was like a dream. I loved it. The first time I stepped
Well, did
off
you commit
bus.
To come to I was Carolina going before, you, before you saw it? You didn't care.
I had no idea where it was.
You just had a happy surprise.
I was going with Coach wherever he was going. It made no difference. He was leaving New York. I was going with him.
Well, we just got a minute or two left, but you've agreed to come back and we'll talk about the what happened after you got to Chapel Hill.
Sure.
But you were telling me before we began that you were going back to give a talk at Stanton Military Academy
Yes.
because you're an alumnus. But how did that fit in?
Well, how did I get in there? See, this is what of the what ifs in my life that's changed a lot of things around. What if Everett Case gave me the scholarship? I don't go to Stanton Military Academy because my transcript was okay to go to NC State. But when I got to Carolina, my transcript was not okay. I was missing two classes, a language class and a math class, to get into Carolina. So they got me into Stanton Military Academy to pick up the two classes.
For a whole year.
To be eligible, yes, for a whole year.
And who's paying for all of this? Is Carolina
I think my mom had to come up with $1,000, if I'm not mistaken, the help cost. And then I think Stanton Military Academy gave me a partial scholarship to go there.
Well, we're going to come back and talk more, but just to wrap this up, did you have a good experience playing basketball at Stanton?
Oh, yeah. At Stanton Military Academy, we lost the first game to the University of Virginia freshmen by 2 points at the University of Virginia. And the reason we lost is I had a broken finger right here. And I had it, they put a splint on it.
On your shooting?
On my shooting hand. That's the way it goes. They had it out here, so I had to rip it off to play. So I played with a broken pinky that game, so we lost. We won all the rest of the games. We went to the Glen Falls Invitational Tournament, which is the prep school for the Eastern Seaboard, and we won that. So we only lost one game.
Well, Lenny Rosenblum, this is such a great story about how you got to Carolina, and thank you for sharing it with us, but I want to invite you to come back, and we'll talk about what happened after you got here.
Certainly. Thank you.
Thanks to Lenny Rosenblum for sharing that experience with us. I'm overwhelmed with this story. Hope you enjoyed it, and if you did, I hope you'll join us again when we get Lenny Rosenblum back to talk about what happened once he got to Carolina. Thank you. Well, this is D.G. Martin. Welcome to Who's Talking. This is, I guess, part two because Lenny Rosenbluth was good enough to come and visit with me. And we talked about his growing up and his introduction to basketball, and we got him to Chapel Hill. But I thought you would also like to have Lenny talk about that his time at Carolina as a basketball player. Lenny, you, when we were talking earlier, you told us how you got to Chapel Hill and you just loved it, but you had to go to Stanton Military Academy for
yes.
a while. And you told us a little bit about that. Anything else we need to know about
that? No, sir. People ask me, well, how did you like Stanton Military Academy? And I tell them I loved it. I thought it was great. Got to march with a rifle and
you have to wear a uniform?
Go to bed and had to wear a uniform. And I thought I had a great experience there. We had a good basketball team. We lost the first game by 2 points to the University of Virginia freshmen. We beat them again. We beat West Virginia freshmen came to our gym, and we beat them, and we beat everybody else for
the
championship.
Did anybody ever try to pull you away from your commitment to North Carolina?
Oh, University of Virginia. He was there almost every game, the coach.
And what did how did he make his pitch?
You know, would you like to come to the University of Virginia? I said, Coach, I told Frank McGuire that I'm going with him.
Was Coach McGuire already at Carolina?
He was at Carolina, he came a year before.
How was he doing that first year?
I believe he was 11-10.
Uh-huh.
But they were in the Southern Conference back then. And they did come up. I believe they played at Washington Lee, and the Stanton coach took our team down there to see him, and that's the first time I saw him. He didn't have to check in on me or anything
else.
You
were committed.
I'm going where you're going, coach. He knew that. He knew that, and there's some funny stories with coach and myself. Like I said, we had a relationship before I came to Carolina. I really liked him, and when I got to Carolina, he was the varsity coach, and I was a freshman.
Oh, that, in those days you had to play freshman.
You had to play freshman ball, so he had a friend, Harry Rosenthal, who ran a jewelry shop in Durham, and that was one of his friends. And Harry used to bring some delicatessen from New York down into Durham, and Coach would call me and say, "Lenny, we're going to Harry's for lunch." So we would go to Harry's for lunch, and Harry's son, his name I think was Dick Rosenthal, played for Duke freshman, but I don't know if he ever made the varsity or not. But anyhow, we went for a lot of lunches over there, and Coach would call me up and say, "We're going to scout somebody tonight. Come on, we're going to go to scout." So I would go to him with him to go scout.
Even when
Wake
you were a freshman,
I was a freshman. And then
who was your freshman coach?
Buck Freeman.
Uh-huh.
Buck Freeman was his coach when he was at St. John's.
Was he the guy who stuck with Frank?
He stuck with Frank, and Frank stuck with him.
And people, the stories were that maybe that he was really the genius in terms of—
Yes. Coach McGuire did not do X's and O's. That was Buck. Coach McGuire would tell you what he did not want you to do on a court.
What he did not
want
did
you,
not want you to
did
do.
Not want you to do on the court. For example, if you threw a ball into the center from the center of the court, he would go crazy, because percentages show that you're not going to get many passes through from the center to pass into the pivot. Go from the side. Go from the angles. Those things. Things he did not want you to do, which is more important than what to do. We all knew what to do. You know, you play high school basketball. There are things that everyone does. But he refined the game by practicing what you do in the last 2 minutes of a game, whether you're ahead or whether you're down or not. What to do because they didn't have a 30-second clock back then. So there was strategy what to do at the end of a game. You know, hold the ball, not hold the ball, go after him, not go after him. But he was a little different. But what he did, he got you up for the game. But he didn't have to make any speeches because you had that University of North Carolina on the top. And to me, that was enough. I didn't have to get up for a game. I was ready to play for him. And
what about your other freshmen when you got down here and the guys you were playing with? These were the makings of your championship team already?
No. When I came down, I came down with Bob Young, who played for Delphi High School in New York, and I played against him up in the Glen Falls Invitational Tournament, prep school tournament. Joe Quigg also played, but we didn't play against his team. They got beat before we played them. So Bob Young and myself and a kid named Frankie King. Now, each one of us, Frankie King came with a shopping bag. That was his suitcase. And Bob Young and myself had a little suitcase with all our clothes in it. So we had a little suitcase. We got on the train in New York, and we came to Raleigh, and we were picked up in Raleigh. And, you know, the first thing I had to do and it's funny, when I got into UNC, the next morning, Frank McGuire said, "We got to go see the president. He wants to ask you questions." So we go up and see Dr. Friday, first thing I did. And he wants to know how I got to Carolina, you know.
Because you just tell him the same story you told us.
I told him, Coach, I said, "Dr. Friday, I'm following Coach McGuire. Wherever he was going, I was going." He said, "Good enough." And that was it. But
That's a great story.
He wanted to know how in the world a kid from New York went to Stanton Military Academy and then came to the University of North Carolina. So that was it. But then when I moved up to the varsity, Coach calls me in the office and says, "Lenny, we have a different relationship now. I'm your head coach."
Did he really say that?
That's what he said.
What was he?
That's what he said.
He said, "We're still friends, but not the same kind
of
friends."
That's right. That's right.
And did that make a difference, do you think? Or did he treat you more severely as the coach than he did when you used to?
Yeah. But he wanted me to understand that now, you know, he's my coach, which is good, which is good.
Well, how did that first year on the varsity go for you guys?
We won 10 and lost 11. And we were, at one time, we were very good. And then I think we lost either 7 out of the last 8 games or something. There were problems.
What do you mean? On the team?
There was problems, a little problems on the team.
Well, you've said.
I don't know whether or not they disliked the way that I might have been taking too many shots because what McGuire did for me. Now, McGuire knew. I don't know if he ever saw me play, but he might have. He never came to me and said, "I saw you play." But I would play freelance. There were no X's and O's. I didn't pass to someone and run here. I was free to go wherever I wanted on the court. So I would help bring up the ball. I would go into the pivot. I would go to the side. Wherever I ran, I'm following the ball,
basically. And coach is okay with that? You think some of the players
The coaches might not have liked that. The players might not have liked that.
Did they signal that to you?
No, but everything is runs in many seconds. When you are cutting to the basket, if you don't get the ball right away, it's not there anymore. And if it comes a little later or it comes at your feet, you're losing the ball. And that sort of happened a little bit where I wasn't getting the ball where I needed to get the ball because it didn't take me long to get my shot off. I mean, all I needed was to get the ball, take one dribble, and right up, and it's.
Pete Brennan a long time ago told me, he said it was easy for us. He said, "Coach said, get the ball to Lenny."
Yeah,
he said I was a good shot, but Lenny was a sure thing.
Yeah, I by that time I learned to take every shot that there is, hook shots, jump shots, one-handed shots. In fact, my warm-ups would probably drive a coach crazy because when we came out after the layup drill, anybody shooting, I would go to the corner and take hook shots where people take three-point shots now. I wanted to see how many hook shots I could make from the corner.
And could you make them from the corner?
Yes. I would make 3 out of 10, 4 out of 10 wow. hook shots from the corner because that was getting me loose. And then the last 6 or 7 minutes, I would go to the spots where I would shoot from and take those shots. But in the beginning,
but to warm up, you take
warm up,
these
hook shots
3-point
from the corner.
Shots, 3-point hook shots.
But there were no 3-point bank.
Right.
But I
right.
would go in the corner. And Tony Radovich had a great hook shot. We'd both go to the corner and see how many we could make out of 10.
Well, this is your sophomore year.
This is my sophomore year, yes. Yes.
You said it was about an even, but you had a downturn at the end.
Yes, we had a downturn at the end.
So how did the coach deal with that?
The following year, he brought in new players, and he brought in Joe Quigg, Pete Brennan, Tommy Kearns, and Bobby Cunningham.
So now these guys, but they still had to play freshman ball.
They had freshmen. They had a great freshman team. Yes.
Did they come on to play with you in your junior year or your senior
year? Junior year.
So they were
junior
coming
year.
Up from the freshman
they were junior
team. So you
year.
Knew
yes.
they were.
Yeah, they were good.
Knew they were coming.
They were good. They were good, yes.
Ease
yes.
the other guys
yes.
out.
Yes, and we had a good season that year. For the first time, well, to give you an example.
Lenny, hold that thought. Time's okay. running so fast. We'll take a break. If you join us later, I'm visiting with Lenny Rosenblum. We're talking about his years at Carolina, and he and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Lenny Rosenblum. We're talking about we're moving towards talking about the championship game in 1957 when Carolina defeated Kansas. But what we're doing is getting there. And Lenny, when you took a break, I had you at your junior year.
Okay.
And then you got all these great guys coming in.
But we got to go back to my freshman year.
Okay.
When my first freshman basketball game, the only scholarship player was Bob Young and myself. Okay, and the rest were walk-ons or have open practice and kids who played high school basketball.
Why hadn't the coach been out recruiting?
Bob Young and myself were the only players that
well,
were there.
Well, those are two good players,
yeah.
but
that was it. That was it.
And were you looking forward into the teams, the varsity teams? Did you see any people that?
They had Jerry Vader was there. He was all conference his freshman year. Tony Radovich, we had some good ball players, but it didn't gel. Freshman year, the first freshman game, we couldn't even get into the gym. The gym was locked. We had to find someone to open up the gym.
Is Woolen Gym?
Woolen Gym. There might have been 50 people at the game my freshman year. By the end of my freshman year, the gym was packed. And when the freshman game was over, half the people walked out. I brought the people into the gym because I was taking shots.
So the word was getting around. Was it mostly you're shooting?
Shooting, because I was taking shots that they'd never seen before. I mean, hook
this
shots from way
Stephen
out.
Curry kind yeah, of yeah, yeah. Magic that
yeah.
you were bringing.
It was just the different shots that I had, not the normal shots of the day at that time. So we brought people in, so people were interested. My junior year, when Pete Brennan and Joe Quigg and Bobby Cunningham and Tommy Kearns come around, that made up the nucleus of our championship season. We were ranked for the first time. We were ranked in the top 20 in the nation. And we had a good team, except Wake Forest had our number, and they beat us in the ACC tournament. We tied state for the conference championship for the season, but then Wake Forest knocked us off.
Now, who was did you see Bones McKinney again at that point, or was he someplace else? Was it state or
Bones didn't realize who I was until years later. When I came over to him and said, "Bones," he knew who I was. I played against him. I said, "You don't remember me, do you?" He says, "Let's go back to 1951 with Boston." He says, "Oh, my God, that was you?" And I said, "Yeah."
Well.
Yeah, he didn't realize who I was that I played against him. But
So Wake Forest upset you in the tournament, and that way you couldn't go to the NCAA.
No, you had to win the ACC tournament.
Could you go to the NIT? Or
Nothing. That was it. Go home. I was home. And coach never let us forget that game.
What do you mean?
They killed us. They killed us. It was like, I don't know, 26 points or something.
Well,
they won with ease.
Dickie Hemrick? I was trying to
think. No, Dickie Hemrick wasn't there. They had Lefty Davis, Jackie Murdoch, Jim Gilley, Ernie Wiggins. But they were good. Murdoch and Wiggins were the number one and number two foul shooters in the nation. They didn't miss. And they were good. And they matched up against us great. And, I mean, every game against them was tough. Our senior year, we had to play them and beat them four times. Four times. And, like I say, every game was right down to the wire. But going back to the beginning of that season, Coach McGuire said, guys, you know, we have a good ball club, but remember the Wake Forest game. And he said, Lenny, you are the captain of this team. And I said, Coach, no. And he says, so I called a meeting of our team right away when season started. And I had a schedule for each player. And I said, look at the schedule. No one should beat us.
And so said, you really believed that you really you thought
I told them right away. I said
in any season to think that you can get away
no
with
no one
that.
Should beat us. I said we have points all over the place. Name the points. Kearns, Quigg, Brennan. These are a lot of points. Bobby Cunningham, who did not like to shoot but could shoot, and myself. We had the points. It was the idea of playing together, rebounding, and doing what coach says. We should not lose a game. And I said that right away to the guys.
What was it? You're taking over like a captain should, but very seldom does. But what were your practices like?
The practices were good. They didn't like the way I practice because I would not practice hard. I believe that if I'm going to get hurt, I'm going to get hurt in practice.
Oh, so you're protecting yourself?
I'm protecting myself.
And the well, what about the other guys?
Well, the other guys thought I was loafing in practice, but I didn't want to do anything in practice that would make them look bad. Because I knew I can get off the floor quicker than they could for a rebound. And the way I rebounded, I didn't want to hurt anybody. Because, believe it or not, I never had a rebound taken away from me all through college. If I got my hands in that ball was mine. I was coming down with it. Because I found out early, if you go up with two hands to get a rebound, you can only jump so high. If you take one step and go up one-handed, you're going higher than you can jumping that way. So all my rebounding was I would come up with one foot going up cross, getting the ball with one hand, and then bringing the other hand up and coming down. As I came down, the ball is coming in this way. Down, and anybody that put their hand to try to get the ball away from me, my arms closed, and I took a dribble, and he fouled me.
And were you a good foul shooter?
I should have practiced more. I shot 70-something percent, but I just don't go up and shoot the ball. So I caught the ball differently. I never caught the ball two-handed. I caught a ball this way. Because I watched the baseball players, all ground balls. They never caught a ball this way.
Or a good end, or a good passer.
Right. They got the glove down. They got the hand this way. So if it's going to bounce off you, you're going to get it. So why would I catch a basketball this way? So I always caught a basketball this way. Plus, I caught the ball. I'm ready to shoot. My one-handed jump shot. So I when I played inside. Everything's changed when I went into the pivot inside because they couldn't play me inside. I would get the ball and take hook shots or turn around and take jump shots. So they had a hard time playing against me.
If they kept you from going to the basket, direct to the basket, you're just...
I played with my back to the basket a lot easier because it was easier for me to take a step out and go up for a jump shot and turn around in midair. And I know where I was at all times.
So you would turn around. You told us in the earlier segment that you had to be square to the basket when
turn
you
around.
About release the ball. So
turn
you
around.
You would jump.
Jump
turn
and
around.
Turn around at the same time. I would come to the foul line, get the ball, go up, turn around in midair, and be square to the basket. Everything was square to the basket. I never took a shot that wasn't square to the basket.
If you joined us late, I'm visiting with Lenny Rosenblum. We're talking about his playing in basketball at the University of North Carolina, and we're going to get him later on to tell us about that championship game. And I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Lenny Rosenblum. He's telling about his experience playing basketball at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And we're talking about that season in which he and the team went undefeated. And he told me something that startled me, and that was that he believed from the beginning that that team could go undefeated. A miracle for any college team.
Yes.
To go. But you believed it. I
used to tell Coach how many games we had left. I said, don't worry, Coach, you're going to win them all.
Now, did your teammates adopt that? Or did they say?
After the Maryland game at Maryland, they believed it.
Why was the Maryland game such
because,
a
Because Maryland had a good team, and we played at the University of Maryland. It was the biggest crowd south of Madison Square Garden.
And ever?
Ever at that time. And that Cole Gym was a big gymnasium, and they had us down 4 points with 2 minutes to go. And Coach McGuire called timeout. We had the ball, and he says, "I believe you guys are beat, and I want you to shake."
He said that.
He said, "I want you to shake hands with them, and tell them they played a good ball game, and we'll start our streak next game." And I looked at him and said, "Coach, you're crazy." I said, We're gonna win. Don't worry about it." And we did. Kearns came down and scored, made it 2 points, and then somehow we got back there. We ended up being tied. They had the ball the last minute and held it and went in for a shot and missed it. Then it went into the first overtime, and the same thing happened in the end of the first overtime. They had the ball, went in for the shot, missed it. Then we went into the next overtime, and we won the game.
Well,
and coming back, there was a snowstorm, so we couldn't fly home. We had to take the train home, so they got a sleeper car for us, except none of the tall guys could go in the sleeping car. We couldn't sleep. So Quigg, myself, and Brennan, we sat in the restroom, which had some place to sit, the whole night because we couldn't go sleep in the car. And we just talked about the season, and they said, yeah. He said, "I believe you. We're going to win them all."
Well, I'd love to talk about the whole season, but I'd like to talk about the ACC tournament and the postseason and your all's road to the NCAA finals.
Right. The ACC tournament, the winner of that tournament goes to the NCAA. If you lose, the season's over. That's it. The first game, I don't know who we played against. Maybe we always used to end up playing Virginia. We beat them rather easily. It's Clemson, because I probably had the two best ball games of my career back to back. We played Duke at Duke, and we beat Duke at home by 2 points, I think. And we played Duke at Duke, and it was a close ball game, but I hit 40 points against them. And then the next game, we played Clemson in the ACC tournament, and I came back with 45 against Clemson. So those are two big back-to-back games. So then we played Wake Forest.
Now, Wake Forest beat you in the...
The year before.
You're ready to go.
This is the fourth time we're playing them. Each game, we beat them at their court, our court, the Dixie Classic, and now we're playing them the fourth time in the ACC tournament. And each game was under 7 points, 2 points, 3 points, 4 points. And we're down by 2 points with 40-some-odd seconds to go. And McGuire calls timeout, and he just says, get the ball to Rosenbluth. I mean, no uncertain terms. Just get the ball to him. And went back out, and I went toward the key, foul line, and Bobby Cunningham hits me with a pass. Now, I knew someone tripped over my foot and went flying toward the sidelines. But then I started to dribble, and I knew I heard the whistle because I immediately went up for a hook shot from a little bit toward the foul line in, and it went in. And if you take a picture, there's a picture in the Raleigh paper of the hook shot. My shoulders are square, and my hand is perfectly going in, perfect form. And the ball went in. To this day, 60 years later, to this day, the Wake Forest people say, I charged. To this day, Jackie Murdoch, who became a good friend of mine, you charged, you charged. Well, the referee didn't see it that way. They said, basket is good, and one shot, and it put us 1 point ahead. They missed the shot. They had a foul. We won the game by 2 points. That's how close it was. Because if I don't make that shot, we're not going anywhere. Wow. Because you couldn't foul either Murdoch or Ernie Wiggins. They're going to make their shots. They were the leading foul shooters in the nation.
This was the semifinal game.
The semifinal game.
Who did you play in the finals?
We played South Carolina, and we just destroyed them.
Was South Carolina good that year?
They had Grady Wallace. Grady Wallace was the leading scorer in the nation. I mean, he can shoot the basketball. So South Carolina was tough.
But they weren't of the quality. They
no,
were European
no,
quality or even
no,
Wake Forest
no,
or Duke's quality,
no,
I guess.
No,
but
no.
They, how did but they get to the finals?
They beat NC State, and they beat, you know, Grady Wallace mm-hmm. was a great shooter. But we stopped him fairly well for us. So
you didn't – once you won the ACC tournament, you didn't have the same long pathway. There were, you went straight to Eastern Regionals.
We went to New York City, where we were not well enough known at that time in the NCAA competition to go right away. So we had to have what is known as a playoff game.
Mm.
So we had to play Yale to actually – get into
the,
it.
Right. I think it was 16 teams at that point.
Yeah, I think so. So we played Yale at the Garden, and we beat them. Then we went to Philadelphia to play, which was the nemesis of NC State, Canisius College, because the 2 years before, Canisius always beat NC State. The year before, when they had Ronnie Shavalek, and they had a great team, they went, I think, the 4 or 5 overtimes before Canisius beat him. But Canisius did beat him. So we played Canisius the first game, and we beat them fairly easy. I set a Palestra scoring record of 39 points in that game.
Wow.
So we beat them.
So then you're to the Eastern Regional Finals.
To the Regional Final. We played Syracuse, and we beat them. And beat Syracuse, which was a rough team.
But not a squeaker. That wasn't a squeaker.
No, I would say maybe 12, 15 points all the way. It was never close.
So you're going...
Now we're going to Kansas City to play Michigan State the first round.
What was the... I tell you what, let's take a break and then come back and talk about the talk about the Michigan State game. And then if you win that game, what happens then?
Then we go to Kansas.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Lenny Rosenbluth is my guest. We've been visiting. This is really the second program with Lenny, and we've been talking about his career at Carolina, and we've got just the few minutes to talk about reaching the NCAA Finals in Kansas City. And you had to play one team first.
For Michigan State. Now, we didn't know anything about Michigan State, and teams that played against us, you know, you didn't have nationwide TV and scouting and this. You had to, I think, buy a scouting report from professionals and make up scouting reports. But they could never scout our team because we didn't have any plays. So we were all freelancing. You know, I would go here, there, go around. But they knew they had to stop me and hope that they can stop Pete Brennan and Joe Quigg and stop
it. I didn't ask you this before, but you've emphasized that you roamed. You didn't have a set play.
No, we didn't have any set plays.
Was that a Lenny Rosenbluth thing, or was that a Frank McGuire?
McGuire knew that I was a freelance player. I didn't know X's and O's. I had no high school coaching. That if I had to pass the ball to someone and go cut here, I would not have been the player I was in Carolina.
Would he change after you were gone? Did he become a X's and O's guy?
Don't know. But to me, he let me go wherever I wanted on the floor. So what I did, if they played a zone against us, I became the overload man. You know, so I was, like I say, that summer up in the mountains, I saw the court differently. So I can get free. So I would run to a spot where if they gave me the ball, I was basically wide open. Or I went inside, where it was very difficult for one man to play me. They had to change their defense because one man couldn't play me inside, basically, until Michigan State and Johnny Green. That was a different story.
What happened?
Well, every time I turned around and take my jump shot, Johnny Green blocked it.
He just jumped up and blocked it.
He just jumped up and blocked it.
So what are you thinking when this starts?
Well, then I had to change around and not go inside anymore. I had to go outside and face him because all my shots that I was taking from the inside back to the basket but turning around in midair, I was able to get my shot off about everybody else except Johnny Green, who was jumping high enough for him to swat the ball away. So
did you think when he started swatting that ball?
I said, I'm in trouble.
you think, okay, well, I thought we were going to win every game. Maybe we're not going to win this one.
Yeah. Oh, no, I thought we're going to win this game.
Why? I mean, when you...
It was just the mentality of me and the team. We are going to win every ball game.
How did you finally win it?
Very hard. The first overtime, the score was tied. We go into the first overtime game, and the game has 6 seconds left to go. They are 2 points ahead, and Johnny Green, their All-American, is on a foul line with a one-on-one.
It's over.
It's over. One of the guards from Michigan State goes over to Tommy Kearns and says, 30-1 is not a bad season. You know, so Johnny Green misses the shot. Pete Brennan gets the rebound, dribbles the whole length of the court, takes a jump shot from inside the foul circle, and makes it and ties up the game. And now we go into the second overtime, back and forth. The third overtime, I was lucky enough to steal the ball twice on inbound passes and score both times for us to get the win.
The magic was there.
The magic was still there. And now we're going into the Kansas game. And McGuire, before the game, was sitting in the locker room and says, you know, what a great season we're having. And we are a better team than Kansas. But they have Will Chamberlain. Kansas cannot beat you, but Will can beat you. So he says, we have to box out Chamberlain. We have to get in front of Chamberlain. And we're going to have to hope that they're not hitting the outside shots because there's no way that we could have played behind Chamberlain. He was just too big and too athletic. And that's what we did.
So did you just run a boxing one zone type defense?
We played three men around Chamberlain.
Three?
Three men. Try to stop him. Give them the outside shot. If they were making their shots, different game. They were getting hesitant on who's going to shoot. And they would hesitate. And they're not going to make it. And they didn't make it. And then they opened up with a boxing one on me. Why'd they worry about me when you got Chamberlain? I can't understand.
Well, of course, they have Chamberlain. They've got to worry about you. You're you're our Chamberlain.
Right, but they didn't. When you got Chamberlain, why worry about Lenny Rosenbluth? Well, they worried about me. They boxed in one on me, which left Pete and Joe in the corners, and they're making jump shots from the corners. And before you know it, we're like 11 points ahead before they get out of the box and won. And then we have, I think at seven, we're 7 points at halftime, we're ahead. Then the second half, Chamberlain starts to get the ball a little easier, and they come and get ahead of us. And then they hold the ball, and then we come back, and I foul out with a minute something
in the regular game.
In the regular game, which made me sick.
I was just wondering what it was like for you in the overtime, sitting on the bench.
It was agony. It was agony. And what people don't understand, national championship, first overtime, 5 minutes. Each team scores 2 points. Chamberlain makes two foul shots. That's all it scored, 2 points.
He wasn't known as a great foul
shooter. No, but he did. He made foul shots against us. We couldn't foul him. Otherwise, we would have fouled him all the time. So, 2 points. Second overtime, 5 minutes. No team scores. 0 points by both teams. Now, how can you do that? How can you have Wilt Chamberlain on your team and go 10 minutes?
Well, how were they? You weren't even there to help. You weren't.
I wasn't there, but they were holding the ball for the last shot, and they were afraid to shoot the ball, and if they did, we got a rebound, and we missed the shot, and they got a rebound, and nobody scored. And the next overtime, it went down to the last 6 seconds, and Joe Quigg gets the ball and starts driving to the basket, and he is fouled, not by Wilt. Wilt blocked the shot, knocked it way out of bounds, but he was fouled by someone else on the court, and McGuire calls timeout. We're down by 1 point, and he tells Joe, when you make both shots, he didn't say, when you make both shots, here's what they're going to do. They're going to call timeout and try to get the ball in Chamberlain. So we want to make sure that we can get in front of Wilt and don't let him pass the ball in. So Joe Quigg goes to the foul line. And, I mean, if we had 50 Carolina fans there, that was a lot. There was nobody there, no cheerleaders. There was nobody there. But Joe makes both foul shots. I mean, think about it. Both foul shots in a national championship game. And they call timeout. At that time, when you call timeout, you get the ball at midcourt.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
Midcourt. So you got 7 foot one Chamberlain under the basket. The ball went out to one of them perimeter men, and then he throws it into Wilt. But he throws it a little bit too low. And Joe Quigg gets in front of it and tips the ball over to Tommy Kearns. And Tommy gets the ball, and the whole Kansas team is rushing to foul Tommy. But Tommy throws the ball way up in the rafters. And instead of fouling him where the whistle would blow, they all looked up. And by the time the ball came down, the game was over, and we won. Because they still could have fouled him and make him go to the foul line and make the shots. But that was it.
We all were happy, of course.
Oh,
How did but you were with mixed feelings, you must have had, because you weren't there.
God I wasn't there. We won the game. If we would have lost the game, then I would have felt, so horrible. But we won the game, so it's the best thing that would happen. I fell out. Bob Young comes in for me, and with 2 points down, immediately goes to the basket and scores to tie up the game. So, I mean, the best of the worlds. I got to sit next to Coach and trying to figure out how we can win. And then we won. We're national champions. And
that's a great story.
32-0. And believe it or not, 60 years later, 61 years later, people remember our team.
Well, we'll always remember it. I wonder, we said in that first session, it changed history in North Carolina. But what did it do to your life?
Well, I was already engaged to Pat Oliver of Mount Airy, and we got married in June the 1st, I believe it was, in Mount Airy, North Carolina. And they had a parade for Andy Griffin back then, and we had more people at the wedding, I think, than they had the parade for Andy. And it certainly changed my whole life coming to Carolina. So the biggest thing was Everett Case turned me down. That changed my life completely.
And there's a lesson there, I guess, in there, that the things that you think are the worst things in life sometimes turn out to be
the best. Yes, and playing for Coach McGuire, I mean, I couldn't have been happier. And I thank Coach for giving me a scholarship. And I told the guys, I said, you know, this is my senior year, and all of us should thank the coach for giving us a scholarship. It's, you know, today it might be different where the player thinks that he owes the school, you know, he's gracious enough, I will go to this school. They go on ESPN, they put the hat on of the school they're going to. For me, and I know for all the guys on our team, we are so thankful that Coach would give us, be able to go to a school like University of North Carolina. I mean, it's unbelievable.
A great way to end in your spirit of appreciation for what Carolina did. And I assure you that those of us who benefited from the spectacular game will always be thankful to you,
Coach McGuire, and your teammates. I am ever so thankful to be here.
Thanks to Lenny Rosenbluth. Thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.